everybody, and welcome to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 61st episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in again. This has been a busy couple of weeks for Giacomo and myself. We actually are going to be doing a live workout on Monday, which this podcast will come out the following day, with the Holistic Holiday at Home, which if you guys remember, we've done the vegan cruise in the past, but clearly no one's cruising anymore. And they've decided to do it as a home version. And that's gonna start on July 26th. But I think you can sign up at any point during the entire week for this free virtual program. It has like Dr. Greger, Dr. Colin Campbell, Esselstyn, us, obviously. Robert Cheek is hosting the whole thing.
There's like 70 different presenters, speakers, lecturers, chefs, authors. It's going to be one hell of an event. And we can leave a link in the show notes, actually. That way you can register. It's definitely well worth it. Picture the main reason why people go on the cruise, besides the cruise itself, the education, the resources, and get the best content that you possibly can from all kinds of amazing people.
Yeah, we've mentioned in the past that on the cruise, you can actually go to some of the lectures and pay to have them count as continuing education credits. So the quality of the lectures is really, really good. But of course, a cruise is incredibly cost prohibitive for most people, and it's also time prohibitive for a lot of people. I mean, 1 year it was 11 days. Not everybody can take off work for 11 days. So I think the idea of doing it virtually online is really cool, because then you can watch the videos at your leisure whenever you want over that 7 days, and that's free. I think there are some upgrades where you could be part of like a live Q&A with certain people or get some additional resources, ebooks, things like that. But to actually watch all the lectures is free. So yeah, we'll leave a link in the description of this. So if you guys want to check that out, you can. Giacomo and I, we did a Q&A for Vegan Strong, but also we're going to be leading some at-home workouts, which is a little bit different than what we normally do. But we're just super excited to be a part of something so cool.
Yeah, outside of that, we hope that everyone's enjoying the summertime for what it's worth. For those of you that live in the States, it's definitely a strange, weird time. I know we keep saying that, but it's kind of like, well, normal, right? What is normalcy? And I think we're all kind of redefining what that is and what means more to us than anything right now. We have the things that we think mean a lot to us, and then when we are put in a situation like this, what is really important shines through. So hopefully whatever means something to you, family, friends, loved ones, and taking care of yourself, hopefully those are things that you're able to continue to embrace during these challenging times.
If I hear these challenging times one more time, I'm probably going to throw up. These unprecedented times, these challenging times, these difficult times, I don't want to hear it anymore. So Giacomo's like super optimistic about the whole thing, but what I've actually found is that everybody's exhausted with the situation. Not like depressed or quitting. I gotta hand it to all of my clients. Not one person has quit or like given up. But you know, I have seen a lot of people that were able to maintain some optimism in the beginning of this situation. It's wearing on everybody, I feel like. It is definitely wearing on people. So, you know, if you're feeling like this is wearing on you and it feels like the light at the end of the tunnel just keeps moving further and further away, you're not alone. Because that is something that I've noticed, that a lot of my clients, when they're checking in, they're really bummed out. And sometimes they can't even quite put their finger on it. And they're like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, I just feel so off and down and this and that. And I can tell by what they're saying that they feel very alone. But because I'm hearing it from many, many people over and over, some version of the same story, I know that a lot of people are feeling this way and a lot of people are going through it. And I just figured I'd say, hey, like, I'm lucky to have an interesting perspective to get to talk to people all over the world on a weekly basis, that you're definitely not alone. It's thick. It's everywhere.
No, for sure. And I've found a very similar narrative throughout all of my clients as well. And we have the vantage point of working with all kinds of people who are either just starting to or have already gotten their life completely put together in a way that allows them to take care of their health and themselves. And it's like, well, no matter what's going to happen, you're going to continue to train and eat well. And I feel like everyone's fibers have been tested and everyone's nerves have been kind of spent. I mean, and there's been so many changes too. I had 8 competition prep clients at the start of this year, the start of this competition season. I'm down to 2. And some of the prep clients had to bow out by force because there were no shows left. Others made a decision to not compete because they didn't feel like it was worth the risk. And even those who, the competitors that have left that are still looking to step on stage, they're coming to me and they're like, I just don't feel right. You know, even like this anchor that just gives them something to look forward to is not enough. I mean, it's the same thing across the board. Everywhere you turn, we're all sort of missing something in this isolation.
I was super lucky. I don't know what happened last year, like 2019. I probably had 15, 20 clients competed last year. And I think because of that, most of them decided to not compete this year. So going into this pandemic, I only had 2 people that were prepping, and a few people that were going to start prepping in the spring, and we came to the decision together that that was a bad idea. And now they're all like, geez, thank God I didn't decide to start prepping. Because there, believe it or not, there have actually been some competitions that have happened. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand why anybody would want to do that right now. But there have been competitions that have happened, and I've heard horror stories of people showing up for their competition, and then they had to like change venues and wait outside. And when they came in, they just got straight on stage. Everybody's tan was melting because it was so hot outside. There could be no spectators. They had to wear masks on stage, which I have to say really resembles the chicks from Mortal Kombat. If anybody ever played Mortal Kombat as a kid, girls in high heels, bikinis, and masks on their face looks like Mortal Kombat. That's all. I'm just saying that. But yeah, there are some shows happening, but the vast, vast majority of them here in the States are, they're done. They're not going to happen. You know, states are currently moving backwards in the phases, like they're starting to close down again. Not all of them, not us, luckily. But some states are, like LA right now is expecting a full stay-at-home order any day now, which is crazy.
It's a wild, unpredictable environment.
Don't say it.
What'd you think I was going to say?
Unpredictable times. I was going to have to whack you.
No, not at all. It's obviously, like, it's not our decision to tell someone to or not to compete or even to suggest it. There are so many different variables, and there's always like the, well, what's your plan if you can't compete? Why are you doing this? And these are the kinds of questions that we ask while still respecting the competitor's desire, right? Because yeah, I mean, stepping on stage with the mask and knowing that there could be all kinds of complications at your show, these things can certainly change the experience. At the end of the day, I feel personally like it's your decision, as long as you're not hurting anyone else, to be as safe as possible with it. And if it's something you want to do and you're as okay with the experience as possible, then do it. But it's a very touchy subject, I gotta say. It's a very sensitive thing. But
I don't think it's all doom and gloom, because even though, like, I don't think prepping is what most people are doing right now, I don't think that it has to mean that all progress is lost or like you can't have goals. I think that now is a good time to focus on, you know, if bodybuilding is your goal, right? If getting like really lean is your eventual goal, there are things you can do that are not prepping, that are not dieting, that can set you up to be more efficient when that time comes in the future. And that is kind of what we wanted to talk about today. So what we're talking about here today is about how letting go of the idea of having this perfectly svelte, lean physique now can actually set you up to have an easier time achieving it in the future, and possibly having it even look better than it would have if you just kept trying. If you guys listened to our podcast a couple weeks ago, I talked about one of the biggest mistakes that I made in the Dumb Things We Did as Bodybuilders podcast. Biggest mistake I made was just hammering away at trying to be lean, just always being in a caloric deficit or trying to be in a caloric deficit so I could be leaner and leaner and leaner. And I bet money that if I had never done that, if I had just taken some damn time to eat enough and lift enough, my physique would look significantly better today. That's how important I think it is. So today we're talking about temporarily letting go of your physique in order to have a better physique in the long run.
And it's really a scary concept, and it almost seems counterintuitive. I feel like the biggest hurdle is the mental one. It's rewarding to watch yourself become leaner. It's rewarding to keep your body in a lean state. I don't really think that there's much debating that. I've seen it time and time again. For those of us who are physique enthusiasts, that is a direction we go, and that is the direction where we want to stay. The problem with that is that it limits your rate of lean body mass gain exponentially, which limits your ability to shape your body the way that you want to. The first thing I'd like to talk about is your starting point. Truthfully, no matter where you're at, I think there's always benefit to being in a non-lean state, letting go of your physique. That being said, when you are newer to lifting consistently, it is imperative to focus on muscle gain as the priority, which means if you're in, say, an athletic physique, like as far as your body fat goes, if you have a six-pack, for example, or if you're on the leaner side, then you're basically limiting your potential. You don't have enough energy to train and recover properly to gain as much muscle as humanly possible. The thing of it is when you are newer to lifting consistently, even if you've lifted in the past, if you took a break for a year, 2 years, what have you, if you come back to it, you are primed to gain a ton of muscle, like a lot. And if you focus on dieting down when you could be focusing on muscle gain, you're limiting your potential to change your physique.
So I think there's really two, you know, if I have to picture the person that we're talking to right now, I think it's really two people. So there's the one person who's kind of just like I was, like I had never been as lean as I wanted to be. So I just kept trying to be leaner over and over and over. Having never actually been there yet, I felt like I was just chiseling away, trying to get to the finish line. And what would have really benefited me would have been to pause and not be in a deficit for like a couple of years, really. But the other person that you could be talking to is somebody who either just went through a shredding phase, they just ended their bodybuilding season. They're already very lean. Even if they like logically know their body can't safely stay there, it's really, really hard to let go of that physique. Even if they know it's the best thing for them, it's a super challenging thing to do because it feels like you're moving in the wrong direction. It's like, oh my God, I just achieved this great thing and now I need to gain body fat. What? It feels like you're failing. It feels like you're letting yourself go, and it's super, super hard. But if you plan on making any kind of real improvements to your physique, and of course improvements is subjective, but if you, let's say you're a competitor and they told you you need to bring your legs up or you need to bring your delts up or blah, 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 you're never going to be able to do that by staying shredded. It's just never going to happen. You're just not hormonally optimized to build muscle, and you're certainly not eating enough calories to build muscle. It's a very expensive and slow process under the best conditions. You need to be doing that in order to make any improvements to your physique, but it's challenging because both internally it feels like you're failing, and also, unfortunately, externally it can seem like you're failing. Other people might perceive you putting on some very much needed body fat as failure, and that is really challenging to deal with as well.
And I think the other issue is that the risk you run of staying in that state is that your life winds up becoming somewhat unbalanced, which of course makes it so that your relationships can become compromised, your quality of work, your quality of life in general becomes compromised. And yeah, you can do it for another year, but things are not as black and white as you tracking and doing things versus you saying, okay, this thing I want for myself, I'm gonna let go of it. Like, life does not work like that. the consequences of staying in a state like that, that is unsustainable for a long period of time, makes it so that whether it's by choice or by force, you're going to likely wind up in a position where your quality of life diminishes so much that you may just be forced to fall off track. And that's not exactly going to be a place where you can find consistency for the next 2 years, for the next 5 years, for the next so many decades. And that is where the true progress is made, when this becomes a lifestyle and when you do it for the long term.
Well, I was just thinking about how this could be misconstrued. Like, people could misunderstand what we're saying and think maybe we're saying, like, you can't stay lean forever, which I don't think is true. I think you can, once you reach a lean place that you're, like, happy with and you're eating enough and your life isn't suffering too much, you can stay there. When we're talking about lean, we're talking about lean, unsustainably lean, which unfortunately, if you've ever taken your body there, moving back in the other direction is super challenging. But I do think that you can find a happy, healthy, lean place from which to operate from. It's kind of like once you've basically achieved the physique that you're happy with and that your life is happy with, you can maintain it. So that's not what we're talking about. And actually, I think that might be a really interesting podcast for another day. Like, what do you do when you're, like, done? What do you do when you're pretty happy with your physique and you just want to keep it? So that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who want, they still want to, they want wider lats, they want bigger quads, they want only not a six pack. Well, you know, sometimes you get really shredded and you realize you just, I mean, yes, everybody has abs, but yours are not particularly well-defined, or maybe you want them to be a bit blockier or thicker. Not gonna happen if you're eating in a caloric deficit. You gotta eat more to build that muscle up.
I think people are just looking for that X frame and they think that they want their abs trained, but really they just want to change the shape of their body. And that involves, dare I say it, growing, as in gaining muscle from head to toe. And that requires an investment in yourself. That first 15 years, that buy-in phase where you get the physique and you're looking for, it takes some sacrifice. Now, I do want to say that these periods of time where you're able to enjoy an athletic look, say you're 1 year in, 3 years in, or what have you, 5 years in even, I think there's some merit to that too, Danny. I think it's somewhat good for the ego and just somewhat good in general to prove to yourself, like, hey, I can get there and I can stay there. I don't want to take away from that. Be there for 6 months, be there for a year. The point, though, is to not let that become where you live at, because that will be it. Essentially, you'll limit your potential to change your physique and all that work that you put in for the next 5 or 10 years. I don't want to say it goes to waste, but you just limit your potential so much.
You're basically like in a hamster wheel, which if you're at a physique you're happy with, that's fine. Hamster wheel away, my friend. But if you're still looking to make improvements on your physique, you don't want to do that. I don't think that's a good idea. But I think the majority, I mean, we do have a lot of bodybuilders who listen to this podcast, but I think the majority of the people who do listen to the podcast are not competitive bodybuilders. They're just fitness enthusiasts who want to look better, feel better, be healthier, and be vegan. And I think that's awesome. So I think in those scenarios, you're much more likely to find the other person I was describing, the person who maybe has never been as lean as they want to be, but it's just like this never-ending quest to get there. And it's very counterintuitive to think about, but if you stop trying to diet, you will be in a position where your quality of training will improve so much that you will actually be able to build muscle. And then once you actually do start dieting, in at least a year, like give yourself at least a year of not dieting, then when you do start to diet again, you're gonna be like shocked at how much better it's working. Just like shocked if you've given your body the chance it needs to heal, essentially. Being in a caloric deficit all the time, there's so many downsides to it. Especially as a female, there's so many downsides to it. Even if you never get like absolutely shredded, if you're eating in a caloric deficit for years, You may very well lose your menstrual cycle. You might notice your hair starting to thin. You might notice it starting to fall out. Your nails getting brittle. Your emotions are kind of all over the place. Your brain is foggy. There's so many reasons to not constantly be dieting. Not to mention you're more prone to injury. And any little injuries you do get are going to take much longer to heal. And then given the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic, one of the worst things that you can do for your immune system is to have the body be under stress. And a caloric deficit is just another way to stress the body. It weakens your immune system to be dieting, which was one of the reasons that, I didn't think prepping a lot of people this year was a smart move. So luckily that didn't happen. But it's hard. It's hard to tell, I've had to tell a lot of people. I've had to tell women who have been, eating 1,300-1,400 calories for years that come to me and say, I want to get leaner. I want this. I've gotten close before, but I've never really gotten there. And I say, okay, we're going to start to eat more. Just trust me. And it's a very hard thing for people to be able to do, to trust and take a step away from dieting. And some people, it's too hard and they can't do it. Eating more is too hard and they can't do it. And we gotta walk it back. But if you can stick out the process, it pays off with dividends.
Yeah, it's something we're especially sensitive to. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's gotta come from the individual. They have to want it. And we usually look for evidence and signs that the increase in food is helping their relationship with food. They're able to enjoy their meals more. They're talking about all kinds of extravagant foods and ordering out less. Like, they're just like, oh, I just enjoy eating healthy foods. And they just stop talking about how hungry they are. And then, of course, you watch the numbers start to go up as far as them increasing the amount of volume they can handle and being
able
at the gym. And they're able to train more often, and they're able to have a better outlook on who they are and what they're doing outside of their training and the way that they prepare their meals and enjoy their food. So
I think one of the kickers is that what is the first thing people think are going to happen when they stop being in a diet for years? They immediately think, I can't do that. I'm going to gain weight. I would say more than 80% of the time, they don't gain weight. In fact, their body barely changes visually at all. Sometimes their weight stays the same, but their waist gets smaller as they eat more. No, that doesn't happen to everybody. Everybody's different, but most people are very surprised. They're like, I'm eating 300 or 400 calories more than I was eating before. How am I not gaining weight? And at least one of the reasons for that is that your body has a happy place. It has a weight, a body fat set point, body weight set point. It has a place it wants to be. It's happy there. And if you are constantly eating not quite enough, your body will find ways to conserve energy so that your maintenance calories to maintain that particular body weight gets lower and lower. It'll save calories by you might not fidget as much. You might not gesticulate as much. Your digestion may slow down. You may stay a degree cooler than you normally would. Like, everything slows down. So essentially what you've done, this is what people are talking about when they talk about metabolic damage. It's not really metabolic damage. Nothing's damaged, but it is a metabolic adaptation. It's your body doing everything in its power to keep you right where you are. So as you start to eat more food, your body feels, I don't like to say your body feels safe because your body doesn't feel anything, but for lack of a better way of putting it, your body begins to speed up those processes again so that your overall caloric burn increases to more or less match what you're now eating again, because your body wants to stay at that body weight.
Nah, I'm taking it what you're saying. There's so many valid points there. I'm thinking of how we quantify it, the science and whatnot, but it really just boils down to homeostasis. And I feel like when it comes to what we do here, how we nerd out on bodybuilding, we tend to think that we can control all the variables, and that gives us the ability to do pretty damn well much anything we want to. And yeah, we can outsmart our body somewhat to get to a certain place, but eventually, if you stay there long enough, your body will pretty much adapt to where you're at, and it will downregulate the metabolism in ways that you cannot control. So it's like, perhaps you can go out and you can get 7 to 10,000 steps in a day and make up for the lack of fidgeting, but one way or another, eventually, if you stay somewhere long enough, your body's gonna find a way to slow itself down in ways that you're not even aware of consciously.
Well, I mean, you can, and I'm not saying you can like you should, but a human person could always just eat less and eat less and eat less. There is no such thing as starvation mode, which a lot of people, you know, I still see it thrown around frequently. Starvation mode doesn't exist. If it did exist, nobody would ever die of starvation. Their body would just go into starvation mode and they'd maintain their weight, right? If you're interested in like a really sick and twisted experiment, you can check out the Minnesota Semi-Starvation Project, which happened, I believe, during World War II. It was really screwed up. But yeah, these guys basically ate, I think it was 1,200 calories a day for months, and they didn't go into starvation mode. They just kept dropping weight. But what is the cost of that? The cost of that, I mean, you can read the experiment. The cost was so, so high. These people, once the experiment was over, they almost all rebounded all the weight that they had lost back and then some. Many of them came out with eating disorders before eating disorders were even a thing. Like, they didn't have a name. Nobody knew what it was. But these men, these full-grown men who volunteered for this, came out with eating disorders, with incredible food fixations. Starvation mode doesn't really exist. But if you are eating so little, if you're eating so little for so long, there are tremendous costs to both your physical health and your mental health that can actually last a lifetime. So that's kind of a little bit off topic, but I still think it's interesting.
No, it is. I think it's a healthy fear to be aware of those risks. I also think that when you allow yourself to be a more balanced human, that some of these things do in fact correct themselves naturally. Not all of them. I think some of the behaviors and habits are in the back of one's mind, and there is some mindset work and remapping and like just basically like taking care of your mental health, if you will. But I don't think that you necessarily have to sit there and change who you are and relearn how to be a balanced person. I think part of the equation is literally just accepting that you can be healthy without being unnecessarily lean, like healthier actually. Like, it's a good way to be, especially when you're focusing on having more lean body mass on your bones. It does take time for that to happen, and it is a process.
It takes such a long time, and that's why I think it's so frustrating for people. You can lose a pound of body fat a week relatively easily. Like, it's not super easy, but I mean, it's well within a reasonable frame, right? A pound of body fat a week. You absolutely 100% cannot gain a pound of muscle in a week. I mean, maybe like somebody who's kind of new could gain maybe a pound and a half of muscle in a month, maybe two if they're brand new. But at this point in my life, where I've been training very consistently, I guess I'd say for like 7 years or so, dude, if I gain like 2 pounds of muscle in a year, I'm doing something right. One of the problems when people do decide, okay, I'm gonna stop focusing on cutting, I'm gonna focus on building or maintaining or gaintaining, it is so slow that it's frustrating because it feels like you're not making any progress at all sometimes. It feels like, has anything even changed? What is even happening? Because when you're in a fat loss phase, it's almost like a flip book of progress. You could literally put week after week pictures next to each other and see a difference sometimes. But when you're building, I mean, I look at people's pictures month to month, honestly, to see the changes that I see. And often we barely even look at the pictures to tell if there's progress happening there. We look at their lifts in the gym and if they're getting stronger and if they're able to handle more volume and if they're recovering better. And on the mental side of it, like, are you still obsessed with food and planning your meals for hours every single day? Are you still like wasting your life away on MyFitnessPal playing macro Tetris? Because that's not good. So we're looking to see those sort of things start to decline. Are you still like losing your mind every time you're around a jar of peanut butter. We want to see that start to decline. And it's important. But I think the biggest, the takeaway, the point of us recording this podcast was that you can step away from doggedly chasing a lean physique and actually eventually get a better physique. It's literally investing in yourself. You're investing time into yourself. You're investing time of being kind of uncomfortable in yourself in order to achieve something better.
The other thing I want to throw into the mix, and this is perhaps a little more on the daring side of things, is that for those who are truly, truly looking to squeeze every last drop of potential out of their fitness, it's honestly not a bad thing to get out of an athletic zone and to literally have that much more mass on your frame.
What do you mean?
What do you mean
an athletic zone?
Like an athletic body fat range when you're on the not so lean side and when you're walking around as a larger person, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, you can push it too far in the other direction, though. And I don't just mean like, oh, you push it too far in the other direction and you're obese, because like, who cares? I mean, who cares if you have a little extra body fat? Not a big deal, right? But if you have, once you cross a certain threshold of body fat, building muscle actually becomes harder again. So there is like a hormonal sweet spot. You know what I mean?
Kind of.
Your hormones shift in such a way when you have excess body fat. And what is excess? It's different for everybody. You know, I would say if I had to like slap a number on it, I'd say like over 32% for women, maybe, and over 27% for men. 25?
Yeah.
27? I'd say somewhere, I mean, that's not an exact number, but somewhere over those numbers, your hormones actually become a lot more primed for storing body fat and a lot less primed for building muscle. And that usually has to do with, like, I believe, don't quote me on this, I believe it has to do with the increase of estrogen that happens when your body fat gets above a certain point. But also, when you're too lean, your hormones drop so low that you also are not primed for muscle building. So there is a sweet spot, and some people will err a little higher on that. Some will err a little lower on that range. And, you know, you there's no test you can take to see where you're supposed to be, whatever that means.
That is a very valid point, because regardless of where you're starting at, when your priority was not focusing on your physique, once you do start to delve into it, you'll realize that your body's going to gravitate towards wherever it wanted to be in its own naturally, if you aren't someone who was interested in this at all. And I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is that everyone has a different body type, regardless of how active they have or haven't been throughout the years, and regardless of how much work they're putting in now. So there's no set range. There's no real way to quantify this. It's a matter of checking in with yourself and seeing and being honest with yourself as far as where your body likes to settle out.
Yeah, so some things to think about: where is your body happiest is like, where are you getting the best sleep? Where are you performing best in the gym? Where do you have a good amount of energy to get through your day? Where are you not unbelievably food focused, but also not incredibly stuffed? You have to really ask yourself those things. And unfortunately, most people, I feel, are gonna wish their body set point was a little bit lighter than it actually is. That's what I've found talking to people. A couple people wish it was their body fat point, their body weight set point was a little higher. Most people wish it was a little lower.
Fast forward to 10 to 20 years and it's much more of a level playing field than you might think once you put the work in.
Myself, my body weight set point, it's around 140. It is like where my body is happiest. But as Giacomo has pointed out to me recently, I look very different than I used to at 140. So even though my body weight set point is still the same because I've been working at this for so long, I don't see it as much as Giacomo does, but you know, we can never see ourselves super well. Apparently I maintain 140 with more muscle and less fat than I did, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, we never see ourselves and we constantly want to be this work in progress, and rightfully so, but Yeah, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass at all. You genuinely look different at 140 than you did 5-10 years ago. And I could tell by the look in your eyes that you think that I'm just saying something off the cuff. And
you're my husband. You have to say that.
Which is why I said it 5 years ago, but this time it's different.
You jerk.
No, but you know the difference of when someone's like, all right, clearly your body composition is different now at 140 than it was 5 to 7 years ago.
But if all I ever focused on was the number on the scale, I would think that I've made no progress in a decade. I just think it's a really interesting thing to talk about. And if I had constantly just tried to be leaner than 140, if I hadn't eventually said like, all right, fine, 140 it is. We're just going to stay here and we're going to shut up and we're going to enjoy it. If I had just kept trying to be 130, which is what I wanted my body set point to be, but it is not, I probably never would have been able to build the muscle that allows my body to look a little bit better than it did before. Because I just wouldn't have been eating enough to build muscle, so my body would have stayed at 140 because that's where it wants to be anyway. I would have been hungrier, I would have been more miserable, and I wouldn't have been performing well enough in the gym or eating enough to actually build any muscle and make overall improvements. So now, when I do decide that I'm going to cut, which I almost exclusively do for a bodybuilding show, I don't just cut weight for fun or for the beach or anything like that. So I just do it for shows, that I also have to lose 20 pounds in order to do that. It's really not that much fun. But when I do get down to 120-ish to step on stage, I look a lot more muscular than I did previously. 3DMJ, which is the bodybuilding coaching team that both Giacomo and I work with, and we like the work they put out with a lot, they actually overall generally recommend a 1-to-4 ratio of time of cutting to building, which means if you're gonna do 4-month prep, right, that would be 16 weeks, right? You should spend 16 months building. And unfortunately, the way the bodybuilding circuit kind of runs, usually we see someone, you know, prepping for 4 months and then building for 8 months so that they can do the exact same shows again next year. And that's just not enough time to make real improvements. Usually you're going to spend half of the time you spent in a diet recovering from that diet. And if you got really, really lean, it might even be longer than that. So in 2018, when my prep was 10 godforsaken months long, 10 months, guys, that was not the plan. The shows just kept, there were just more shows. Anyway, 10 months. It took me over 5 months to really recover from that. So those 5 months of just recovering, they don't even count. They don't even count towards building, in my opinion. They're just, they're just like trying to get my body right again. But if I dieted for 10 months, which I did, God help me, that would mean I would need to build for like 40 months, right? That's over 3 years, and I'm on 2 right now. So I know that sounds crazy, but it's not that crazy. And to me, that's one of the signs of a mature bodybuilder. And I don't mean like age-wise, I mean like the emotional maturity that it requires to not diet. Like, it doesn't take you're not like a warrior for being able to prep. I think it's a million times harder, and anybody who has either done a bodybuilding show, or if you've lost a tremendous amount of weight and then realized, oh crap, now I have to keep it off, the period after the diet is way, way, way harder.
The fall off is intense. Oh gosh. I would say it's, conservatively speaking, 80% of competitors fall off in one way, shape, or form after a show, and many times they can't really be brought back to reality. They just got to go through it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the challenge of accepting that they need to not have that temporary look anymore. They
and
get lost
they
in it.
And they just busted their ass for a good chunk of the year for something that they only had for a couple weeks, and then it slips away. That's challenging.
Yeah, it's madness.
I do disagree with you with 80% of bodybuilders dropping off. I would say way more than 80% of bodybuilders struggle immensely after a show, but I don't think 80% of them just like disappear. There are a lot of people that do just disappear, though. They'll never compete again. They'll often require lots and lots of medical help, mental health help. Sometimes they do just completely it seems like they just disappear from the community entirely. Something not a lot of people talk about. It's really, really sad, actually.
Yeah, there is that over the edge kind of place that people go, and there's almost no coming back from it. It's like sometimes it can take forever.
I think it has a lot to do with the predatory nature of coaching businesses in general. I mean, I hear about it all the time. Coaches that they're like sharks at a gym. They see somebody who looks pretty good, they're working hard, and they're like, hey, yo, you ever thought of competing? Have you ever considered competing? Like, I can get you there. They're like drug dealers getting someone hooked, basically. And, you know, because you make someone look awesome, it's great for your business. But, you know, again, at what cost? If you haven't explained to somebody what the risks of bodybuilding is, something like 80, like you said, like 80% of competitive bodybuilders either have or have dealt with disordered eating or eating disorders. You don't warn somebody about that. That's like, there should be like a do no harm clause, really. Anyway, that could be its own podcast. You guys want to hear me get really, really heated? I'll talk about predatory coaching companies because it is dark. But we'll save that for another day.
I'd say it's more than half of the coaching services out there, in all honesty.
Don't bait me. I won't take the bait. I will not take the bait on this podcast.
I'm passing the salt and see if you're going to shake it on the podcast.
Oh, it's so much worse than being salty. It's just straight rage. The things I have seen. Oof. I wish there was a bureau that I could report these people to, but there's not.
And yet we can't look away. We do love this sport and we do love this lifestyle.
Yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, that is our conversation on why you should maybe consider taking a step away from constantly trying to be lean in order to overall have a better physique. So if you guys have any questions about this or anything like that, feel free. You can email them to us, veganproteins@gmail.com, or you can send it to us on any one of the social media platforms. And before we move on to our question and answer segment, I just wanted to ask you guys, if you are listening to this on some kind of podcast application and you're enjoying this podcast, go ahead and leave it a review if you have a moment. It really does help us to get this podcast in front of more people. And, you know, we really do try to spread the best, most helpful information that we can. And we really appreciate your feedback. So thanks so much for tuning in, guys.
Moving on to our question and answer segment for today. Danny, any meal plan advice for a cutting phase? Having trouble keeping my protein up and carbs low.
Man, there's so much advice that you could give here. First, I'm going to direct you to our YouTube channel, actually. So we do have a YouTube channel. We put out content just about every week on there. And there's a playlist there called, I think it's called Setting Up Your Macros. That is like a 5-video series that literally teaches you every single step you need to do to set up your macros, whether you're cutting or bulking. But also there's a video that teaches you how to set up your meal plan based on your macros. So I'd first highly recommend checking that out because it is step by step, like everything you need to know. What was the question? Having a hard time keeping your protein up and your carbs low. So if that's the issue, I would say definitely find foods, like specific foods, do some research to find the foods that are higher in protein and lower in carbohydrates. So for me, my favorites are seitan, Yves, Canadian bacon, some mock meats, certain protein powders. Let's see, lower in carbs. I mean, tofu is very low in carbs, but it is higher in fat. And use those as the sort of base of your meal. Base of your meal might be the wrong way to put it. Plug those in as the first part of your meal and then build around those things to make sure that you're not throwing in too much carbohydrate. So by the end of the day, you're over your carbohydrate goal or your fat goal. If you plug your proteins in first, you're a lot more likely to hit that goal without going over. I'm struggling to feel satisfied while cutting. My stomach growls. I'm adding pea or soy protein isolate to all of my meals, but damn, I feel hungry all the time trying to eat 1,500 calories.
Well, for one, of course, It does depend on the caloric deficit. My thought process here is you're probably in a deep one and or not used to the process. So there are things that have not been thrown into the mix yet that can for sure be helpful. Satiety is one of those things where when you use it, you can actually delay the true hunger pangs from distracting you from your diet for quite some time. There are so many different things you can do. I heard that you're getting in protein powders, which leads me to think that maybe you're having shakes. At least that would be the first question that I would ask. Without more context, I'd have to assume that that's a possibility. Now, there's nothing wrong with using protein powders to get that number up because protein is in fact satiating and it's a good thing and it has a thermic effect. So it's multi-purpose. That being said, if you're getting shakes in, you're not necessarily filling your belly up in a voluminous way. So what you can do is cook with your protein. Try to bake some protein bars or perhaps sprinkle in the protein with some oats where you're having something voluminous that's gonna fill your belly up. The other thing that you can do is make protein bread. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can prepare things with protein powder, put it that way. That being said, you can rely on other protein-dense foods as well that are voluminous, like tofu. Really great food to keep you feeling full, and it's also has some fat in it. Okay, food is one thing. Obviously, protein is not the only component there. I mean, I could keep going. Get in lots of dark green leafies so you could have nice, big, large plates of food that are nutritionally dense and also satiating, but not calorically dense. You can focus on your meal timing and try to have perhaps an 8-hour feeding window that tends to be optimal. So in other words, maybe have your first meal at noon, have your last meal at 8. Those are not hard and fast times, but just an example of how you can have a smaller feeding window and fewer larger meals in between to feel more satisfied. And then when you're not doing that, have other things to do that are not food focused. So I feel like that's a really helpful thing. Focus on your stress levels as best as you can. The diet is stressful enough as it is, even if it's something that is rewarding. Focus on your sleep hygiene. That is the best way to manage and mitigate your stress. Focus on hydration. Keeping well hydrated is going to make it so that you are less likely to want to overeat. So often we think that we're truly hungry and we're really just thirsty and a little bit more hungry than we'd like to be. So hopefully these tips will help you. There are all kinds of other ways to keep satiated and to have better results with adhering to your diet, but I feel like these are some of the most important ones to focus and consider.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. If you have anything you would like us to talk about, any topics you'd like us to cover, or questions you would like to ask, please send them to us. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm at Vegan Proteins, and Giacomo is at Muscles by Brussels. We really look forward to hearing from you, and we appreciate your feedback. Thanks again for tuning in. My name's Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon.